Francis Hunt, CMT in technical analysis and founder of The Market Sniper. Welcome to The Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Delighted to be back, Tom. Thanks for having me back on.
Always a pleasure, Francis. And, you know, we recently got in touch because you see a setup that you've been looking at for many years starting to express an opportunity for your community, for, I guess, investors at large here. So what does the South Korean won have to do with what you've been looking at, and also possibly an early indicator of the AI bubble possibly deflating here?
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you for asking it. And I mean, it's an interesting country that we don't have to, in the Western side, necessarily gravitate towards. You know, we're very US-centric, we're a little bit Eurocentric and many things. And now we've been taken out east by me, and particularly South Korea. You know, why not Japan or something else? Well, there's something that's been aligning in the Korean won for quite a long time. And we've been, I'll give you my history of tracking it. I've been tracking it for an extended period, calling that there will be a series of events, sometimes thinking that maybe they would, you know, start a North versus South war and then try to get some messy peace deal and unify them, think East, West Germany. You know, I've speculated on theories as long as my arm as to why. And what's actually happening in the last 6 months, because I've been in that space for 5 years, I'll show you the whole history since we've been tracking it on that currency, that there's a big contagion collapse in that currency coming. Why do we say it? Technically, through HVF method. I'll demonstrate that in a minute. And then what's the significance and why should people care about a medium-sized first world country on the other side that actually still gets put in the emerging market index in a lot of indices? Well, it isn't just a country far away. It isn't just a smaller currency far away. It's, of course, got intricate tapestry that has woven it into the AI bubble. And the two big companies that everybody needs to know the name of, one they certainly already know, and that's Samsung, probably the most successful device penetration by percentage market share, I'd imagine, probably beyond Apple and many others, and an absolute juggernaut in general appliances. If you can have a washing machine and a dryer, big brand on everything. The other one might be lesser known to us, but is certainly not unknown in South Korea, and it's SK Hynix. And it's the chip making that they've been up to that is in a very sought after area that has seen their stocks absolutely rush up. And they are the two. They are now, and just in case everybody thinks, you know, MAG 7, it's the narrowest stock market. There's a breadth indicator in technical analysis, and it talks about how many stocks are going up. And of course, you're in a tech boom in the States where you have a magnificent 7, and there's probably a top 20, maybe 25 with AI stocks that are all in the, you know, the trillion or approaching a trillion, if not through a trillion market cap, that are essentially the representing the bulk of the breadth of the stock market. And actually quite a lot of stocks are well below 52-week moving averages. But because of this one particular theme that's thrusting up, it's dragging everything disproportionately up. And people will think, yeah, that's very narrow. Well, in South Korea, in the KOSPI, it's incredibly narrow. It's those same two stocks. They're 50% of the market. So instead of a Microsoft, a Facebook, an Oracle, you know, SpaceX or whatever it is, a Tesla and a number, you're literally talking two guys. So it's worth bringing in the charts now and actually showing you a little bit of what I was saying. First on the index, and then I'll bring in the currency as well, because people need to understand currencies are very indicative of flows, global flows. When money flows in, flows out. You need to think of a water going down a hill from, you know, one bucket into a lower container somewhere else, but on a downward path. That represents the flow. And when you change that gradient, you get something else. But let's just appreciate the KOSPI in all its glory for a minute here. That was roughly April. It's about 13 months ago, Tom, down here. And I'm going to do the percentage increase on this indicator for you. By the way, it's already log scale. So you see that's logarithmic. Just if you wanted to see it non-logged, that's what it looks like. Non-logged, you can see the absolute force that it's gone up. So if we do what is a first world, this isn't Zimbabwe, by the way, the first world, as I've already mentioned, very smart nation, tech-savvy nation, et cetera, South Korea. It's gone up 291% in 13 months, in effectively 13 months. So we're on a daily chart that's 278 days. It's just through, you know, I think it's a 270, yeah. So that'll be trading days, bear in mind. If I put it on a weekly time frame, and show you it on a, to get more of it in shot, and we measure it, you'll see that you're going to be talking around 57 weeks, I think it is. We might be into the 58th. There we go. Same data, 60 bars, so 60 weeks now. So just beyond the year, 291%. So as a reminder, that's 3.9 times. That's almost four times. In just over a year, a month and a bit over a year. So that is brutal and that is extreme as a move up. And you probably agree with me that that doesn't sound like it's particularly sustainable. And that is part and parcel of the unbelievable move that has taken place in AI. Now, South Korea, a far smaller country, relies on foreign direct investment in most instances on its KOSPI when it's going up. So I'm going to just show you a bit more history as to why I say that. It's not regularly gone up domestically all of its own accord. So what I'm going to show you is a split screen, and we'll have the KOSPI up top, which is the one you were shown initially. And below it, I'm going to show you a Korean won that is against the dollar. Now, whilst we're calling for a 50% collapse, contagion collapse in the one. In fact, and a potential for overshoot on that, so it could get smaller still. I do want to highlight that it's not purely a dollar bull phase. It's also going to weaken, in my opinion, against the Chinese yuan and other currencies. But the dollar will do just fine because we have the history and the chart on it. So for a little bit of history on our role with the Korean won, this is the first time we're bringing it in to short. Let me just go 2 months here and squeeze it on. It's previously done incredibly interesting moves and been quite a tell-all for Asian crises. You may see this breakout that was the forecursor to the Asian crisis. So it signaled very beautifully, gave a very nice technical setup. And we are now in, our opinion, one of these again, a very tight squeezing volatility-based constriction, which is part of our method, HVF method. And it calls for a breakout and it calls for a substantial one through 2,740. Now the level currently is around 1500 at the moment. We've been calling this from when it was in the 1450s. My first engagement with it was, could this be the breakout the first time when it was taking out this high? And I, of course, was wrong and it pulled back. I had a second venture, by the way, that was way back before 21. This was during, subprime, my apologies, CB19 era, 2020. And there was a second event. So we've been wrong before, straight up, let you know, and it pulled back very strongly there. Since then, it is now broken and is very well set. And we'll draw that for you, why we expected to get that. But here's the thing about the KOSPI index and the currency. If the USD Korean won is going up, that signifies weakening of the won. And here we have the KOSPI going up. You typically have the won strengthening. So note that is a down arrow. That is strengthening, USD KRW going down. So that means money, think like water flowing into the country, nourishing it, and the stocks are going up, it's being parked in assets, etc., etc. So very typical of a bull move. In fact, I've already illustrated this, I think, in expectation of our discussion, and this will help a little further. So you can see these different events. Now, this was a chronic weakening in the one period over there, and that was associated with quite a severe collapse in the KOSPI index. Remember, the KOSPI is above and the dollar South Korean is below. So just a simple illustration generally of the fact that down for the KOSPI is weakness in the currency. You can see the currency going up there again, USD Korean won, less weakening one. Then during the bullish periods again, well, here's another weakening period, again Korean won going up. Another weakening period, again Korean won going up. Strengthening period, Korean won being stable or going down. Here was a big retracting period in the Korean won, and you can see the stock market broadly traded up. So you can see that rough strokes relationship with the need for foreign direct investment. Typically, it means inflows. Well bid one means equities going up, and they're synonymous. Typically, as money would go into the stocks, you would have to buy a Korean one and then buy the stocks. Now, what started to happen is that this relationship is starting to come apart, and we've seen here the highs. You've seen the Korean won actually shooting up in the recent, and there's been actually a withdrawal of foreign direct investment, and I've got some charts on that to show you as reminders. There's been some withdrawal of foreign direct investment. However, simultaneous to that, there has been a massive amount of leverage being provided domestically, and the domestic retail market. There's a couple of indicators that the money is indeed foreign professional money, let's be specific, is indeed leaving South Korea at the moment. Korean, South Korean equity outflows is over there. Here's another one, foreigners rebalancing Korean exposure. So the faster the market goes up, typically portfolio management is saying we're now overweight because it's overperformed, almost a victim of its own success in some senses, but it's also a defensive mechanism to ensure profits get locked. So you retreat from the markets where you become oversized. Foreigners rebalancing Korean exposure. You can see the big, big reductions in the year so far. So this is highlighting to me that the market is electing in this instance to move away from the South Korean market, the professional money market. And it's being replaced currently by massive swathes of margin debt in the local domestic retail market. A lot of it is actually in the 50 plus as well. So it's your pensioners, your taxi driver who thinks he's going to have a better retirement, that is reducing his policies to reduce paid up and taking, cashing them out and throwing them into SK Hynix and Samsung or KOSPI index trackers, very much the same, given their weighting almost, I would say. So what we've actually got is a currency that is actually already getting weak now. And you asked a very interesting question around Hormuz and energy, which might come into it. But they are certainly going to be exposed and have to spend their currency and buy dollars to purchase oil. Even though you can buy oil now outside of dollars, it's still the predominant currency. And this is at a time when their chips have that in their two champion chip makers have had inflation rates of 80 and 180% recently in the last year, and are doing record sales, absolute record sales. So imagine if your currency was such a demanded export in dollars that will buy you all the oil and anything else you need for your production, is now already seeing your currency weaken with these record numbers in these two product champions. What happens to the currency when the AI bubble reverses? And this is the question many are asking. Many are asking about the AI bubble, and it will invariably reverse. It's going up too soon. These things never go up forever. Getting the timing right is certainly one thing. Well, in this instance, one of the early indicators is the foreign direct money already leaving South Korea and the currency beginning a weakening process, which is exactly what this lower chart is showing. I'll just bring up, go back to a single chart again, and go to the USD Korean one itself so that people can see this a little bit more clearly than they can there. If I take all annotations out, what you will see here is that this is a firming, a steadily firming USD Korean one. And it's the same, in fact, slightly worse if you add the Chinese yuan in it. So as I've said, this doesn't have to be a dollar story of strength. It is without doubt a Korean weakness play. Let's just get it in CNH. My dyslexia catching up with me there, Tom. But there you go. That's how the Korean won looks against the Chinese renminbi. And that is worse than the USD KRW, but its time will come. And you may get a certain amount of panic bid for the dollar that will give the trade a little bit of additional impetus on the dollar side during that period. But you can already see how the Korean won is performing. And this is not a short term. This is a 2-monthly chart. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 2-monthly charts means you've got a year of performance from that period over here. And you've gone already from around 189 to 224. So quite a lot of deval in there. So it's a very interesting play, and it'll cause potentially a high-tech Asian contagion price crisis. We have already commented that the USD JPY is close to areas that it's tapped out before. So I don't know if this is going to lead into a larger malaise. It's not our statement, but it's certainly in terms of South Korea is going to see a real currency crisis. One of the other things that we mentioned before handing back to you, because I'm monologuing here for quite some detail, is there will possibly be a crypto element to this and a move into USDT by tech savvy Koreans. And they tend to use the Tron network. It's 53% utility globally, and it's certainly well entrenched in South Asia. So you could actually see Bitcoin going down on the tech bust, very much a high beta tied to that. And that could cause all sorts of problems to MicroStrategy and other aspects, but let's not splurge too far and wide. But certainly you could get a bit of a bid on the Tron onboarding as surplus amount of people. Remember at that point, if we're having an AI bust, the stock market you can't hide in, the debt market you can't hide in, no one's going to rush out and buy property. They're all in various stages of post-property pain in bubble senses, hypervaluations. So getting a fast depreciating currency like the one, if it is to lose, as we've indicated, would into a harder currency like a dollar or other would be probably the choice that many people will make in terms of capital preservation. So let me hand back to you before I go any further.
Well, Francis, is this kind of isolated to South Korea, or are there other Asian markets like Japan and Taiwan, for example, selling off more? Is this, you know, is this maybe an indication of more war coming, more escalation?
Well, what we have seen, and it's a real quality question from yourself, only to be expected, but in the one of our big calls in 2020, rolling into 21, was to make note of the bond market's low rates. It was in the 0.3 range, and we made predictions of fives and sixes for the long end in Japan. We said this is going to decay incredibly, which was quite outrageous at the time. Those were our most unwatched videos. Now everybody appears to be a fan of the rates market in Bank of Japan. Simultaneous to making that, we made a very high call on the Nikkei in around about 2020, 2021. In fact, I should pull that up. So when you say who else around the block, it's different. It's difficult not to think of Japan as one point of interest to us. We've always been interested in Japan. And of course, it's a fascinating it's a fascinating market. It, of course, had its big boom and bust. That was the late 80s that you'll probably remember. And this was the head and shoulder we drew. And this was round about the triggering. You could see again, 2020 was, as we've said, one of those years where everything changes. And this was the beginning of a turning in an inverted head and shoulder. I've drawn it like a child, big left shoulder, big head, big right shoulder. And we said 74,000. That was a ridiculous number to have said when the neckline was 22,000. Someone came and called 74,000 on an index at 22,000. Now it doesn't look so ridiculous at all. Where are we? 66,000. So you are seeing a pretty decent move on a lot of stock markets. And this is part and parcel because of a fiat-based collapse. Buying power, hyperstagflation, and inflation is going on all around. And the crowding out of the bond market, which has been losing value, and I will show you the bond market in Japan as well, seeing as we're doing the Asians, and we're going on to Japan. But so the equity is the last refuge of scoundrels. When the equities break, this is going to probably lead to a run into, as I mentioned, stable coins initially, longer run, I see gold and silver benefiting out of that when everybody recognizes it's about the capital preservation that they need and all the other asset classes have been overvalued. But we're not that far from we had 66,000 looking for a 74,000, which just again, to take this off log scale, was quite some call at the time in 2020. If you look at that distance from there to there, it's quite some call. It's still got some distance to go when you look at it like this, but it's done 75%, if not 80% of that move. So there have been equity booms. I wouldn't have said, though, that Japan has primarily been a major AI-specific theme-based beneficiary. You can't say they haven't been, but that not in the same manner of the dominance and narrowness that the Korean KOSPI has.
Francis, because of this, you know, obviously a lot of these markets that we've talked about, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, obviously very much so. Is it possible that this is maybe the first kind of symptoms of this AI bubble starting to roll over? Just because of the very tech heavy nature of those economies. Obviously, you know, you said Japan isn't as obvious, like focused on that, but because of this, the tech heavy nature of that, is that related?
I tend to think of Japan as very good high tech manufacturing. So, you know, you would go with Toyota, Sony, and Panasonic. The AI specifically, which is chips, which is not to say that, as I say, they don't have some investments in that space. You just wouldn't say that they were overweight in them. I feel for Japan in that every industry that Japan has an industry champion, I imagine China is determined to have three. So the one thing I was shocked to see, you know, Toyota's total revenue, I think, is around 300, 350 billion, but its valuation is around 280 billion, well below its sales and profitability. And I would feel that they're probably being underpriced. And this was comparing Anthropic to Toyota, as people like to do different businesses just to show the relative valuations. And I would say one of the reasons why probably Toyota doesn't go any further is because many people feel that Chinese product champions are going to be even eating Toyota's lunch in due course. You know, it's a staple in Australia. It's a staple, you know, in the outback of Australia, the Karoo of South Africa, you know, for reliability if you're doing a ute. But now, you know, you go to South Africa, you'll see a Mahindra, you'll see Chinese vehicles, you'll see others for affordability reasons as well, in that almost Toyota has become a bit too premium. And in affordability and reliability has been sought elsewhere. I'm just talking about vehicles now because it's easy for everybody to relate to. But I do feel that Japan is being stalked And then it doesn't have too many unique industries that China won't think it can compete on. And going back to the Korean story, the CEO of Samsung mentioned that, you know, as strong as they are doing and they're getting these huge order books and they've actually had to cut allocations to how much people were ordering, which just sees them over order in future, which is like a doom loop of aggression. They mentioned that China will be coming to participate actively in that area of chip market that both they and SK Hynix are operating in. And so any major high-tech manufacturer should seek, because of clear supernormal profits, very high inflation rates, unbelievable demand where it's just, we've got to have the chips, what name your price. And that's what's been driving these share markets like that.
Francis, what do you think it ends up looking like when the air comes out of this AI bubble? Does this, you know, bring about a worldwide recession, a worldwide depression? Is it a spectacular crash? Is it a grinding type crash?
I think you have, in the really big crashes, you have multiple phases to it. You'll have a crack in the confidence and a sell-off. You'll have a buy the dip rally. You'll have some violent rallies on even after it's a confirmed bear market, which is usually once you've broken through 20% to the downside from the highs. And I think you're going to go the whole cycle of doom. And I do feel that there's a lot of circular revenue that might, from accounting point of view, expose some gremlins that might point to some fraud in certain instances. Without it having to be universal, it'll be very destructive because it's been hyper overpriced. And I see stocks as a whole re-rating substantially because it's going to be forced. There's probably going to be a degree of forced selling, which is when people are being liquidated. That's invariably painful. And it tends to blow back on retail because employers whose stock has been hollowed out, cancel contracts. It's going to lead to unemployment, almost certainly a much higher level of unemployment. It's going to lead to the stag part where we already have a lot of the inflation part. Many people will say we have quite a bit of stagnation too already. I'm in the hyperstagflationary camp. I think the Hormuz is to jack costs up, insurance costs, shipping costs, oil costs, everything that gets transported by oil's cost. It is a stagflationary maneuver. Remember, the billionaire class get wealthier on that. They retire debt cheaply on beneficial rates and have very friendly lending relationships with banks where they take multitudes of billions. And the blue collar and middle classes get hollowed out by this. So it's going to be very, very destructive. And it's the perfect setup for UBI and potential CBDC releases. So this could be the big one that leads to the eventual reset with quite a bit of, you know, you throw in a bit of social division, divide and conquer, some anger, the Occupy Wall Street, but with real anger this time, vibes, and who knows what you could get. But it's going to be a difficult social cohesion period, and it's going to be, I think, many people are going to be down on their luck in terms of wealth preservational aspects. And I think that's going to be very fertile ground for more solidarity and communistic type phraseology, where we all in this together, and progressive taxation and unrealized capital gains to hammer any who have got away with protecting their capital during this downdraft. So I do feel it's going to provide all the impetus for all the wrong kind of reactions that are already pre-planned. So I don't have a particularly positive outlook, as you probably gathered. I don't say that to be music to slit your wrists to. I just think understand and prepare. And if that is to be that, enjoy your good health. Be well prepared. Don't have variable rate interest rate leverage, because we could have a bust in the bond markets that could lead to a spike in rates, actually. We continue to see debt going higher, as we've appeared many times on your channel, and we've consistently said rates going higher, the debt markets turn. And I'd like to think that, you know, we've been strongly validated on that. And the truth is the system won't be able to take it too much higher, which will bring about a systemic new deal. And I fear those new deals. It's very Roosevelt vibes to me. And of course, he was also the guy who confiscated the gold for Americans.
Francis, when we think about this, you know, the hollowing of the middle class, as you mentioned there, is the, you know, the, these broad indexes that are so dependent on passive investing, like, for example, 401ks, is this also somewhat at risk with the SpaceX IPO here? They seem to have changed a lot of rules. I don't know anybody that's talking about it being fairly valued. So how does that play into this hollowing of the middle class and how their assets are being and have been invested?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And it's something, I mean, the aggregation of passive buying into the hands of the likes of BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street has to go down as one of the most smart. It's a masterful plan, because the truth of the matter is active money management was not outperforming ETFs and passive buying on weighted indices. And they were a lot cheaper. They didn't charge fees and they won the day. The problem is what was a gift has turned into an absolute beast, and it has metamorphosized into a beast that is now being weaponized. First of all, BlackRock seized it for, you know, the transgender agenda, the DEI policies, by giving the asset manager all the voting stock power of the aggregation of America's investment, passive investment money. You have handed power to this group of people that can then dictate to CEOs and have set the agenda and policy as per the Biden era, which we all remember and disgusted so many, and the climate terrorism that they've also perpetuated, all the malinvestment that's gone with that, and all these other things. So what's the aggregation of this power under this asset manager voting block that now has this huge, huge, colossal clout is terrifying. And that's now, and I see this as the legacy family. So people think, well, Elon's done this, Elon's done that. I see him as a front man for a wall of money and a surveillance grid build out. So it's been pushed for him. There's no need for the NASDAQ to court him. There's nowhere else he'd list. The S&P's not going to do it. Other people aren't going to do it. You know, it's all like, oh, and he's got these concessions, like he's this brilliant negotiator. No, they bent it to meet the needs of those, the party that is the exit, that needs the exit liquidity. And in fact, when I say exit liquidity, it's not even guaranteed that it goes down immediately. I do feel this whole event is the ring of the bell for the AI boom, certainly, and will go down a very milestone-y in a number of ways. But if you look how they're structured, they're only listing 5%. This is literally a family business that's thrown, you know, a couple of peanuts into the general gallery. 5% is of the float is absolutely nothing. And then they're going to be treated as if they have nearly half a trillion. So it's around 470. It's 25% of the agreed market cap, which is at 1.75, which is huge, absolutely huge. Doesn't represent value in any way. Massive multiple on sales. A lot of businesses that are pure cash burners in there, not yet profit making, apart from his satellite internet company. It is a turkey stuffing, and people who are in passives should realize that their formulas are going to be obliged to be aggressive buyers of this stock and will be providing exit liquidity. And I've looked at the exit, the liquidity unwraps, and you could be within a year, 93% could already be sold. You know, they've got these 7%, they've got these 25%. If it's gone up 30%, they can sell another. And of course, if you have a wall of money that has to suddenly go from zero weighting of an equity to a sufficiently high enough weighting to consider it a 500 billion market cap, approaching 500 billion, it's about 470. You've got to buy the bejesus out of it. You've got to accumulate a massive amount, and that's a beautiful amount of exit liquidity for the early dogs to bail into. And this confirms to me the preferential treatment. This isn't a private corp. This is NASA privatized, essentially, government contracts, much like his Tesla. He's a front man for statist legacy families. And they want the exit, and they can bully the market into saying you need to change that because they own it. They own BlackRock, they own Vanguard, they own State Street, they own NASDAQ. So why the hell can't they? Especially if they're planning, you know, a bonfire festival of the vanities at the top of the AI boom to exit on and to rain it all down on everyone else. So the socialization of those losses, and you, something else you didn't mention, actually, Tom, but could have, was that Larry Fink even mentioned that public money and personal pensions will be utilized, whether you like it or not, it seemed, very much to build out the surveillance grid, which is what I'm calling it, because to me, this AI boom is 100% going to morph, metamorphosize into that. There'll be those who act shocked, and there'll be those who knew all along. I don't plan to be in the acting category. And, you know, you're going to pay for it. You're going to pay for your own surveillance grid, and you're going to keep funding it, even when it's non-economic. And you're going to wear the bag, and your pension will go down in value when these non-economic investments and this huge overbuild leads to a massive amount of slack that's not getting a return, suddenly gets repriced. Your pension will be affected by it. Mm-hmm. And you will have paid for it all. And you would have been handed the wrong end of the investment when all the others that are dining out on ridiculous valuations are getting out off the rocket ship into your ETF funds. So everything, this is banditry 101. I mean, it really is. If you can't see it for that, and you don't have a cynical bone in your body, then you really need to wake up and take an IQ test or check your heart rate. I don't know which one, but it's banditry 101.
Mm-hmm. Francis, you know, obviously it's very difficult to call the top on these things. And we tend to be very early on calls like this in this space, let's say, because, you know, we're tend to be pessimistic. We tend to really examine these ideas, and we're always surprised at how far they can kick the can down the road before it does become this accident scene. But looking at indicators like the yuan, like many of these ideas that we've already discussed today, it's interesting to see a company like Berkshire Hathaway that's so focused on value. They've also been selling off these really American staples, something like companies like Visa, MasterCard, Amazon, Domino's, and another, you know, a other host of their holdings here. They've gone to cash in all of that. Is that something that you maybe not take into account, but is also a possible indicator of where things are headed here?
Well, Berkshire's been preparing for quite some time. I think he was almost in his fifth year of net divesting and accumulating cash, which tells you all you need to know about valuations and also how long things can become hypervalued for. Michael Burry himself is very aggressively short on, you know, Palantir and a few others that he thinks have got way ahead of themselves. But, you know, that doesn't mean he gets everything right. I think, you know, many people shorted Tesla unsuccessfully because they kept it up. They maintained its valuation. It's almost a front. It's a whole zeitgeist that you daren't and can't question. And the kind of Cathie Wood scope, you know, there's no number too big you can't throw out for Tesla. And I think it, SpaceX could stay high for quite a while because it's going to have a lot of cash keeping it up. So calling the absolute top, I do think these events are going to be deemed seminal events. But I certainly don't think it's going to crash before then, meaningfully. And and even straight after, we'll have to see, because there's going to be a war. But the one thing that will happen is if that cash that chases SpaceX and any other listings like Anthropic, etc., will mean less money for the others. So there's going to be a rotational turbulence between the stocks, because there's suddenly three big fat new kids who just pushed into the feed me mama nest. And that's going to lead to less for the others. So you are going to see certain names maybe turn and soften and start to feel the lack of ETF love or having to share. So there's going to be some churn, I would imagine, but that doesn't mean immediately a drop. But it could be the perfect ring of the bell. You could find that it limps on the ETF money. Personally, if I was in the US and I have an ETF into the tech stocks or QQQ or whichever the case may be, mm-hmm. I would seriously, without not financial advice, I'm not regulated, but I would seriously think plugging that into gold or silver or even miners and switching it off tech for a while and taking my ill-gotten gains and rolling it up and going fishing and, you know, paying off any debts, doing sensible things that I could hunker down and have a good deal of cash. I would check out of the casino in terms of that part of the market very, very definitely, and maybe out of the market entirely. A couple of miners could be good if you can get the share certificates preservational items, and the rest, I would say you're done well, son. Go home.
Well, Francis, obviously it's being looked at as we're coming into a time of higher inflation again because of energy costs, because of all of the chaos within the energy transport markets and the energy markets in general here. How do you see this balance of demand destruction versus the inflationary environment that we're very likely heading into here?
So when you have a very high inflation, much higher than people think, which is where I think we are, it's very useful to have a demand destroying event because people eat less. It's proven in hard times. They consume of all things less, including power, food, the things that you think are absolute defensives get consumed less. And then certainly luxuries, they get hit. You know, those are the things that can get 80%. Property market buying, that tends to fall well down the ladder unless it's desperately needed. So the overall cascade out of a demand-destroying event does take some of the sting out of a very, very high inflation. And that's kind of, in terms of the proliferation that's going on, we are in a very high inflationary period, but it's not measured high. You've got Walsh coming in, and he's saying, you know, we need a new measure, and in fact, inflation's lower. The new measure will have it at 2, not 3.8. And all those measures are lies, but just the degree that they lie varies, and we're doubling down on lying in terms of inflation. But a demand-destroying event is very good at resetting the clock a little bit by virtue of, you know, burning the house down. Nobody gets to make out particularly well or spend very much if you do that. And there will be that deflationary event that leads it. Either inflation eventually kills itself through higher prices. Mm-hmm. Nothing kills higher prices like higher prices. Or they bring on a major overinflated asset bubble for a bursting during this period, and that will lead quite a lot of mayhem around. And sadly, I think a lot of jobs lost, a lot of work lost, and that will all be, well, we told you AI will do this, we told you that, even though it might have very little to do with AI replacing the jobs, it will just be a much weaker, hollowed out economy, especially in the West. All the worst moves are being made in the West, all the sub-economic moves. You look at Europe, you look at, I'm afraid to say, the US too, and, you know, the Commonwealth nations of Australia, Canada, They're all on a bit of a doom's path in terms of freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of movement, and the totalitarianism. So this, they have all the inklings of a Bolshevik revolution, much like Russia and China went through. I was listening to Reichardt and Schiff on a different channel, and you know, Jim Reichardt is saying, well, there's mainly three big nations, you know, Russia, China, and America, and you know, America needs to side with Russia now and deal with China. And I was thinking, you know, they both had their communist overlording, gutting of the masses of the citizenry, China and Russia. And I fear America's next, and he just doesn't seem to see it. He just doesn't seem to see the downdraft. The death of a hegemony is harsh. It is harsh, harsh, harsh in many, many ways, because the loss of value in the currency is debilitating. The ability to get the goods you used to take for granted, imported in, suddenly disappears. It's particularly bad on the hegemony. Ask the British. They were the sick man of Europe for decades and decades, and that was a friendly handover. This one is not. This is quite tumultuous.
You know, it's interesting to kind of see the quiet part being said out loud here. And this, I think it ties in interestingly with the liquidity also within a country needing to be preserved. Modi came out, not overly recently, but like within the last month here, saying, asking the citizens to stop buying gold. Why would they need to make such a declaration like that?
The vulnerability of particular nations to their currency. And, you know, this whole theme of our chat is around the AI bust is going to lay the balance of trade and payments and flows into South Korea to waste, that it's all caused the currency to collapse. Well, India was and is facing the same thing. And when an energy-related crisis comes along, as a very big importer and not sufficiently big enough exporter of high-tech goods or produced goods out of India to the rest of the world, you sit with a nation state that's always teetering on a currency collapse. And of course, the rupee has been weak and continues to weaken. It's the closest currency of the major nations to the Turkish lira, which is not flattering. It's even making the South African rand look good. That's because they buy in too much precious metals and energy, and they don't sell enough goods. This is really the flows of trade. You reduce it to a simple thing. What do you make that you sell that other people want, that they will give you their currency for, dollars or, you know, yuan or Australian dollars or euros? Not enough. And what are you buying of, and are they high value items? Well, bars of gold and silver and jewelry certainly are. And the base metals are costing a lot. So one of the biggest parts that are throwing him into this chronic deficit and is putting him in a shortage of foreign exchange reserves is the fact that Indians keep buying metals from offshore because they don't mine them, and they don't mine energy either, and they don't sell enough of something else. So they're under teetering on a currency crisis, and he wants to address the cultural tendency, which is actually a very good preservational habit for wealth. He wants to suspend it so that he can take the pressure off his balance of trade with other nations and support his currency better. And it's the age-old adage, better to take the gold than the fiat, because one is creaking and the other isn't. The gold sits dispassionately in the corner. If it's a kilo gold, it's still a kilo gold. The rupee is sitting there and it's wavering and it's absolutely capitulating. If you look at the chart on the Indian rupee, for those that don't tend to look at it, I'll pull it up just for a quick courtesy. It's like looking at an NVIDIA stock, I'm afraid to say. And it is a serious problem for him. And the more his citizens choose to continue in such a manner, the further down it goes. You know, in where were we? You were at about 7 in 1973, and you're at 95 today, rupees. So, I mean, it's a terrible performance. And even if we just take it from, let's go from the, everybody will remember the lows of the CV19 just before the event came. There was 2008. You can see how much it's lost in buying power from 2008. You know, went from 30 to 96. That's 148%. It's terrible devaluation, a pretty steady, sure thing. And as I say, probably only worsened by the Turkish lira. This is a nation that whose citizens value gold. And you can see how damaging that is for the local fiat when your citizens value gold. Mm-hmm. Because they keep throwing the fiat back at you and asking for the good stuff. And you can see what that does. It's not the only reason why the Indian rupee is failing, but it's certainly an accelerant in supporting it. And I think you're going to be having the same, as I mentioned. South Korea is actually in that similar problem. They're riding the AI boom and watching the fact that the currency is slipping. And someone must be thinking, damn, when this tide goes out, imagine how bad it's going to get. And that's not India. No disrespect to India, but at a nation state management, it's deemed a more advanced nation by some way. So we're talking about a much more first world country that's going to go into a 50% decimation with a possible overshoot. So that means it's going to go more than 100% up the USD KRW, in our opinion. That's an incredible currency trade. Anytime you make percentage points on a currency side, one or two, it's very profitable. You're no longer counting pips, you're counting it in percentage points. If you're going to get a halving, it's massive. And I think this is going to be crisis economics. The two nations have that one trait in common. They're deeply vulnerable to the fact that they rely on foreign energy and precious metals should the investors wish to buy. And the same goes for Koreans. If they start to preserve capital by buying gold, they're going to have to send one or dollars out to get that. And that's going to lean on the Korean won as well.
Mm-hmm. Francis, I think one of the tougher things to do in this period in time is to get accurate information that you can analyze, let's say, dispassionately, so you can make proper decisions. Do you have any, let's say, sources that you trust that you feel that help you make proper decisions?
It's data on charts. It's you know, that's factual, it's mathematics. I like things that are mathematics. There's no wiggle room on mathematics. You get a price data on a chart, especially if it's, you know, a reputable source. It's probably accurate. There's very few things that I can get away with saying is probably accurate. Mm-hmm. And I draw conclusions technically. I'll have a look at it. If someone says this is going down, often check, and they're saying that, and it was going down, but it's recently reversed, it was doing something else. So I always like to check charts. Charts are the truth in terms of what is value and what the world thinks value is. And fundamentals, gold is money. Gold is money. And, you know, the mainstream media isn't for news. It's for implanting ideas. You know, they're the ones that implanted ideas that Gaddafi was giving all his soldiers Viagra so that they would rape all the citizens. Mm-hmm. That was the mainstream media, repeated by Hillary Clinton, put out on the wires in the States, idea to incite rage so that we regime changed and we now have an open slave market where once well-supported society whose citizens had health care, had very cheap gas, and got a home when they got married, is now turned upside down and is a bin. That's what we did, thanks to, you know, mainstream media and lies. So most things fall under psyops. I'm shocked how many more things I'm concluding must come under some form of propaganda type control. So price on the chart. Get to my decisions based off charts, not off news wires. That's where I'm at. I don't, it's very hard to believe anything anymore.
Yeah. Well, France, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. I think in closing here, give us a summary of the handful of markets that you're watching here that you want to keep your eye on.
It's a fascinating period right now, absolutely fascinating. It is sort of a slightly doomer glimpse, a little bit of a sort of undertaker's vibe to it, maybe. But it's a fascinating market. It's the excess of AI. There will be opportunities, and there'll be fortunes made and lost. And you can choose which one you are if you come in rationally and with methodology. And that's what we aim to do at the Market Sniper. I feel there's going to be some amazing opportunities presented on the currencies. Currencies, once you have them, you can trade usually quite substantial size. You're not limited. It's not like a stock. So that's why currency trades that have a decent chance of outcome are very, very interesting. It's combined with major stock market corrections where options can take play. So we look into this. Our methodology to help people build wealth during these times, also to preserve it, because I fear what comes on the other side of that. We want to entrench our freedoms, and it's much better to be, you know, a wealthy slave with optionality and a multi-jurisdictional footprint outside of the West than somebody who is entirely beholden to the whole puppet show in his domestic nation somewhere in the West. There is going to be a very bad downdraft. We are not the winners in this next cycle. And it could be starting with the AI bust that could contagion into a lot of things. So it's time to get focused on that. There's real profit-making opportunities, but sadly, it could mean hardship for many others. But we don't get to choose that. It's a speculator society. That's the world they made. Let's be the best at surviving and thriving in it.
Well, Francis, it's always a pleasure. For those that want to check out more of Francis's work and how these setups, how he analyzes these setups, that's also available at themarketsniper.com and, of course, at themarketsniper on X. Francis, thank you so much. Always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you for having us, Tom.